I assume everyone here knows people in Florida cannot grow vinifera, any cultivars, since 1565. Now you know. The main reason are PD and other diseases, and also narrow genetic diversity of vinifera cultivars, and also the special way that the people select and bred these kind of vinifera cultivars. So to find a solution, over the last 10 years or so, we have been testing a number of grape genes. Here, listed here, and Dr. Gray also mentioned some of them. And we use our overexpression system to do so. As you see here, the overexpressing plants are doing quite well and showing good resistance, producing fruits several years in a row. But the controls keep dying, and they can last for more than two seasons. We actually repeated three times putting controls to the field, and it's still dying within two seasons. And some growers saw these, you know, plants, and they got very, very excited about it, and they asked when they can get their hands on them. But the reality is they can't, because these plants contain foreign elements. In fact, the whole field is strictly regulated by BRS, a lot of inspections. So to change that, as Dr. Gray mentioned, we created the concept of precision breeding. And I'm not going to recite this here because we have a back-to-back talk, and I assume you guys memorize that. But it's a very important message. And we just need to promote this kind of message to give the hope for the growers. To implement this kind of concept, the objective of this study is to replace the bacterium-derived kalamycin gene, or the MPT2 gene, with a grape-derived herbicide-resistant ARS gene as a selectable marker. And we still need this kind of marker at this stage to select the genetically modified cells. This is a very small step, but also it's very, very important. ARS is acetolactate synthase, and it's the enzyme for the first reaction in the making of three amino acids in all the cells. So it's very, very important. And that's why ARS genes across all the species, or ranging from E. coli to human, are quite conserved. And also, normally ARS has two subunits, one small, one large. In plants, the ARS enzyme is localized in chloroplast, so you can see some, you know, like a transit peptide in front of the mature protein. But most importantly, the large subunit is the target for inhibiting herbicides. So here I'm talking about herbicides specifically for the ARS inhibiting herbicides, but not the other types. Since grape has no known herbicide-resistant ARS, so we took the following steps to create one. First, we need to find the suitable selective agents, or the right kind of herbicide. Then we need to identify the right gene, because we don't know anything about grape. And then generate the mutations, and to test whether which mutation would give us resistance. This is a sort of a reverse approach, because normally people find the resistant mutant and they sequence the gene and then tell you what mutation caused the resistance. So the reverse may or may not work. And finally, we need to play around a little bit with the selection condition to get the best efficiency. These are the experiments to test which herbicides are actually good for us to use, and these are these grape somatic embryos. The results show two herbicides we used produced this kind of called linear Q curves. The other three are very, very potent, and whatever you put in just a little bit, all the cells would die immediately. Ideally, these linear curve ones are more easy, you know, to use because you can control the necrosis process. Because in selection, you don't want that to happen. Now, Arabidopsis has a single ARS gene, but grape, we don't know. And so we did the genome search with the PNOMA genome, come up with 10 sequences, and I listed the protein sequences here. All these 10 sequences actually contain the conserved residues that has something to do with herbicide resistance, according to study with Arabidopsis. And I just showed two of them here. But believe me, they have all the A mutations. So we did the phylogenetic analysis to narrow down the targets, and we found that gene 1 and gene 2 are more closely related to the Arabidopsis protein. I use a protein sequence to do this. And we have 8 others form a group, and in fact, these 8 genes are located in a gene cluster on chromosome 16, while the others is like 17 and 14. I did the protein sequence alignment with the Arabidopsis ARS, and it's very clear the gene 2 has a higher homology, and we have 75% identity for the whole protein and 83% identity for the mature protein. So we assume this is the right target. Now, where to find the mutations? Luckily, researchers in wheat science discovered or identified over 130 wheat biotypes that have become herbicide resistant, and 5 of them herbicide resistant. And then they sequenced the ARS gene from these biotypes and come up with 6 groups of mutations. And these 6 groups actually fit very well into the 6 conserved domains that are known as the herbicide binding sites. Now, when you stare at this table a little bit long enough, you can probably tell this is like a lotto ticket. You have 6 numbers to pick, and each number you have multiple, you know, selections. And if you get it right, you get resistance. If you don't get it right, you get nothing. Okay. But in the biological terms, basically the herbicide resistance represents the interplay among mutations, protein structures, and herbicides. So it's a little bit complicated. And in order to find the resistant mutant that we need, we just have to try every number, you know, just buy all the numbers. And how to make the mutants? We use a 3-step approach. First, the PCR to generate partial sequences in with the overlap region that contains the mutation site. Then we use a Gibson assembly reaction to stitch all the fragments together and come up with a complete gene with the mutations. And then we use a clonase system to move the gene into overexpression system we have. This procedure very efficient, but it's a little bit pricey. And from A to C will run you $100 just for the enzymes. But right now we're very good at doing this, and we can actually assemble up to 20 kb DNA sequences. And this can be used for implementing precision breeding. Okay, this table summarizes the mutants that we sequenced. And as we see here, all the mutants contain the specific targeted mutations, but we also generated some unexpected mutations. But anyway, we have some perfect mutants. And after obtaining the mutants, we first generate homogeneous tobacco lines by using colonizing selection and then run the herbicide selection. Here you can see something different from the other controls. Weeks later, you can clearly see this gene actually confer resistance to 3 herbicides. And after this, we run the test with grape somatic embryos, again, MPT2 gene or the herbicide mutant gene. Kanamycin selection very normal, and herbicides, we can see only the mutant gene will give us resistance. This is the selection efficiencies using herbicide mutant genes and then the kanamycin gene. And again, herbicide selection give us a very good stable frequency. These are stable frequencies. And we recover stable somatic embryos by using the ARS mutant gene and herbicide selection. These embryos are the same, I mean appearance-wise, as the kanamycin selected embryos. Okay, this table summarizes the mutants that we tested. So far, we tried all the combinations of mutations, but the only one that works is the full spectrum mutants with all eight mutations in six conserved domains. And we don't know why is that. But again, it's the interplay issue. Just to recap, and we identified the suitable selective agent, herbicide, and we also identified the right gene from grape and generate all the mutations and the functional mutant gene. Right now, we're still kind of playing around and put the finishing touch to the selection schemes. And hopefully, we can say goodbye to MPT2 for good. Many funding agencies have supported our program, and USDA, Florida State, and UF. And of course, people are the most important factor, and it's a great joy to work with people with a good smile every day. And they are the ones that make the call for change a reality. Thank you.
Question. We have time for a couple questions.
Is precision breeding accepted as non-GMO in other countries?
Not yet. But how can you deny it and see what happens?
We pretty much use the species specific DNA to modify the host. And so we don't use any foreign DNA and no linkers, no nothing. It's, you see the way we make the DNA strands? Nothing, all of them, great DNA.
So yeah. The United States is your kid of the regular GMO. I mean, it's a policy side. The USDA is your kid of the genetic modified?
Well, what was the real impetus of that? Are these considered genetically modified by the USDA? Using their terminology now as cisgenic, they will consider everything on a case-by-case basis. And so what I showed you from them, they would allow me to release at least a simple version with no regulation. And this is really key. You've got to get them into grower fields. You can't be stuck in these little trials. When you look at it, and bring it in from a botanical standpoint and look at it that way with meiosis and mitosis, you would have to really lie to say there's a problem. And when we look at the complaints, especially coming out of the EU, they're worried about multiple genes going in. Well, join the real world. Most genes we find have 20 or more copies. Up to 400?
Yeah, some of the genes. You can see eight of them already probably duplicated. That's a small subunit,
actually. I don't
actually.
Know what was wrong with the scientists over there not to bring this up when it was being discussed. But this is, it's kind of boneheaded when it comes down to it. General botany.
Okay, real quick.
Were these experiments done with a native promoter for the ALS gene?
Right now we use native promoters, but we have a lot of great promoters in hand. Yeah, we can swap that, no problem.
Okay, thank you. Great, thank you very much. If there are more questions, you can save them for after a while.